Joining us now to analyze today's headlines is Robert Jensen. He's an author and a professor of journalism at the University of Texas at Austin. Hi, Bob.
Hello, Sonali.
Israeli officials this morning are denying that their government spied on the U.S. in order to thwart a nuclear deal with Iran. The Israeli Minister for Intelligence and Strategic Affairs, Yuval Steinitz, said, quote, "Israel does not spy on the United States, period, exclamation mark." He added, whoever published those false allegations possibly wanted to damage the excellent intelligence cooperation between us and the United States, end of quote. The allegations he referred to were published yesterday in the Wall Street Journal. The journal claimed that Israeli officials obtained sensitive information from U.S. officials, European diplomatic contacts, and informants, and then fed that information back to members of the U.S. Congress. The story threatens to widen the rift between Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and U.S. President Barack Obama. Well, Bob, of course, the U.S. spies on everyone, and it shouldn't surprise us that Israel might do the same to us. The real surprise seems to be the very public arena in which this U.S.-Israeli rift is playing out. Do you agree?
Yes, it's well known that these two countries are spying on each other. All you have to do is recall Jonathan Pollard, who was imprisoned in 1987 for this, spying on the United States or sending secrets to Israel on the United States. What was interesting about that was that it was a departure from the usual quid pro quo where everybody knows this is going on. But what's really important, as you point out, is that Israel has long wanted to pressure members of Congress to affect administration policy. But now Israel is going directly to Congress to try and upend administration policy. That's the departure from the normal procedure. And that's what's so important. And not surprisingly, the Obama administration, which has been typically slavishly devoted to Israel, like most administrations, it's pushing the Obama administration to finally say enough.
Well, it's official. Years after it abandoned death by firing squad, the state of Utah will once more rely on that gruesome method of execution as a backup. Governor Gary Herbert signed a measure into law yesterday making official the option of death by firing squad in cases where lethal injections are not available. The move is an internationally embarrassing symbol of the U.S.'s continued reliance on capital punishment. European drug manufacturers have been refusing to sell the ingredients for injections to U.S. states based on their objections to the practice. There are currently no reserves of lethal drug cocktails in Utah. A convict named Ronnie Lee Gardner was the last to be executed by a firing squad in 2010, but because of public outrage, Utah officially ended the practice then. Well, Bob, the Washington Post had a report this morning saying that a firing squad might not be such a bad idea, given that it takes just minutes to die, while a lethal injection can make a person suffer for a lot longer. How do you respond to this level of discourse in our media about this, you know, whole idea of capital punishment?
Well, before we get to that, I was thinking of dropping by the studio later, Sonali, and I was planning to beat you. And I don't know if should I bring a lead pipe or a stainless steel rod. You know, I haven't decided which. I'd like your input on that. Of course, the obvious response is it doesn't matter what I'm going to beat you with. I shouldn't be beating you. And this is the same response I would have to the capital punishment. There is a point, if you look at the data, that the firing squad is actually a more reliable way to end someone's life relatively painlessly. But the whole point is that capital punishment is barbaric, that capital punishment gives the state a power that no state should have, the right to end a life. And the fact that we're still talking about this in the United States is, as you point out, a kind of painful reminder of how the United States, which we would hope would be setting the standard for certain kinds of legal and moral principles, often finds itself living in the 18th century.
And finally, Afghanistan's new president, during his first trip to the United States since his inauguration, is planning on officially asking the U.S. to extend its occupation of his country. Mr. Ashraf Ghani will meet with President Obama and Vice President Joe Biden this morning, and will apparently be requesting that the U.S. retain 10,000 troops past a deadline for withdrawal. According to the New York Times, administration officials have strongly suggested that Mr. Obama would agree to slow the pace of the troop withdrawal. Mr. Ghani was strongly backed by the U.S. during the election and was even touted as a progressive alternative to warlord candidates. One of his first acts in office, he signed a U.S.-Afghanistan status of forces agreement that his predecessor, Hamid Karzai, had refused to sign. Last year was the worst year for casualties in Afghanistan since 2009, with a total of 10,000 deaths. Well, Bob, we shouldn't be surprised by this turn of events, should we, as the U.S.-backed president is asking the U.S. to stay on in his country?
Well, I hate to go back in time, but reading this story, it's hard not to think about South Vietnam. Remember, there was a time when the United States had troops in South Vietnam, and it was understood that if you were the president of South Vietnam, you accepted that. And it was also a point where it was clear that when U.S. troops left South Vietnam, the government had no legitimacy and was bound to fall to forces. And I think that's what we're looking at. It's not clear that any government in Afghanistan that can survive in the current climate without U.S. troops, but yet any government in Afghanistan that embraces U.S. troops is going to never be legitimate in the eyes of the Afghan people. All of this is just a reminder that the 2001 invasion was a tragic mistake, that the United States in that fervor post 9/11 was not thinking clearly. Even if you're a militarist, this was a bad response. And now we're stuck with the consequences of that. I don't see a way out of it. Obviously, negotiating with the Taliban is the starting point, but it's not clear there's any good solution to this situation.
Bob Jensen, I want to thank you as always for joining us today. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Sonali.
Robert Jensen is our Daily News Flash guest expert. He's an author and a professor of journalism at the University of Texas at Austin. We'll be right back.